the governor's 2022 agenda, a controversial school curriculum bill, plus Todd Rokita doesn't believe numbers, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 7th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb will push lawmakers to reduce the tax burden on Indiana businesses in the upcoming legislative session as part of his modest 2022 agenda. And he's open to discussion on other tax cuts, but not eager to do so this year.
Indiana's business personal property tax is a levy on business equipment, and Holcomb's proposal would essentially eliminate a minimum level that all businesses pay for that tax on new equipment. He says it will help Indiana better compete for companies to move to the state. Reducing that tax will cost local governments millions in revenue. Holcomb says the state should ensure those governments don't lose out.
Ours is on new equipment, so it wouldn't be realized for years to come, and it would give us a time to actually understand what that price tag is.
When it comes to using the state's $4 billion surplus on anything else this year, Holcomb is a no.
I'm trying to be disciplined about controlling my own appetite to open up the budget in a non-budget year.
Holcomb says he's looking forward to major spending in 2023, including significant investments in public health.
Is Governor Holcomb's agenda a bold one? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, a Holcomb administration official, described this year's agenda as transitional after last year's major spending, both from federal and state money. Is that enough, though, for what the state needs right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the context of what he accomplished last session, the extra $2 billion in K-12 education, where they tried to get a lot of this new money out the door that the state's realizing in record tax revenue, and the ready grants that were all that came out of last session. Then we saw communities all over the state, 17 groups of people and communities and nonprofits come together to put together proposals that were all funded because of the excess tax revenue that we're experiencing in Indiana, and now transitioning to how do we make sure, in the lead up, we talked about, the governor's attention on small business, on allowing them to depreciate those assets so they're not paying for all of human history, their tax on their personal property, which has been identified as one of the worst anti-business taxes we have in the state that we've just never dealt with, in part because of the impact on local government, which the governor's committed to figure out. And then in addition to that, the 900,000 Hoosiers that are not going to be able to access the automatic taxpayer refund that was triggered by, the revenues that they're helping support. So short sessions in many ways are always transitional. Sometimes they do tee up for the next long session, the next budget session. I think the governor, in particular on the tax piece, is trying to find some common ground between where the House Republicans are right now and the Senate Republicans, where the Senate Republicans want to wait and the House Republicans want to cut income taxes. They have comprehensive tax reform. That's where that conversation should be when you're faced with billions and billions and billions of excess revenue that you didn't anticipate. But I think the governor is trying to split it, the impact of that elimination of the depreciation rate on small businesses is very transitional. It takes a long time to realize that all the way down just because of the nature of it. And try to just find some common ground where we're being somewhat conservative with these tax revenues. Don't put ourselves in a bad situation or walk us off a fiscal cliff if it doesn't materialize or we're in a different situation a year from now. So I think he hits the right mark.
Ann Delaney, is this relatively expected from Governor Holcomb, given everything that happened last year and what he wants to do potentially next year?
Well, when you say that this agenda is modest, I think you're being way too kind. What's amazing to me about the Republicans is they are so devoid of ideas of what we need. We don't have preschool. We don't have adequate childcare. We're still not funding education properly. Higher education is out of the reach of a lot of people, on and on and on. And this money was devised by President Biden and the federal government to shore up the budgets of states so that they could help people that were affected by the pandemic. Instead, the Republicans treat it as if it's a bank. They don't want to go off a fiscal cliff by spending the money that may not be there next year, but they're willing to cut taxes on the money that may not be there next year. That's the only thing that they ever think to do. And, you know, you would think that with supermajorities and billions of dollars in the bank, that he would be bold enough to suggest something that could really have a significant impact on the state of Indiana, okay? A really significant state impact that would help people. Instead, we talk about this nonsense. I mean, if you want to cut taxes, we ought to have a debate about cutting taxes. The most regressive of all the taxes, obviously, is not the income tax, although that's regressive. It's the sales tax, and nobody's even talking about cutting the individually paid sales tax. Those are the kinds of things, it seems to me, that you need a debate about in the long session, not this kind of thing where you use up money. And that's what they're trying to do, is use up money so they can put it aside so they don't have to invest in the future and they don't have to invest in Hoosiers, because they really don't, it seems to me, have much faith in the state or its people. They don't think that the next generation needs to be educated in a superb manner. They don't think that our infrastructure needs attention. They don't think we need more college graduates. They don't think we need preschool. And they're not prepared to do anything about any of those problems and health.
They've literally, done all of that. They've literally addressed all Every single thing you just listed.
They have not. When you look
every
at
single
the
thing. They even have a proposal to cut the sales tax.
They have not.
They're not even asking for it. They're trying to do it.
They have not addressed those and won't address those because they don't believe in it. They think they need to shrink the beast. And the way they shrink the beast when they have so much money is to cut taxes. But you know what? When a next downturn comes, when we need something done, should we raise taxes? Oh, no, nay, never. We never raise taxes, but we can cut them without any, without really knowing what the impact of the tax cut's going to be.
Nikki Kelly.
Goes on like that.
We have the filibuster right now.
I thought I'd respond to Mike's.
Nikki, I don't think anybody would call Governor Holcomb's agenda this session particularly bold. But I think we can probably apply that to what House Republicans are proposing, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're proposing $1 billion in tax cuts by 2025, even more a little out, because they would phase some of those in. And of course, phasing a tax in means cutting it, because once they put that in statute, they'll never go back the other way, because that would be a tax increase, even if it hadn't actually been realized yet. There is a, you know, a lot of room between $1 billion tax cut and waiting until 2023. So I'm sure we're going to find something there in the middle. The House and Senate are being pretty, at least bold in they're taking a stand one way or the other. Governor Holcomb is doing kind of more of a fence sitting on the whole tax issue right now.
We'll talk even more, obviously, about the House Republican tax package as it comes to committee in the floor later in session. But John Schwanes, to close out this topic, is this, for the most part, what, though, you would expect in terms of Governor Holcomb's agenda?
I think that's what I would expect, because it really isn't a departure from what we've seen from Eric Holcomb since he first ascended to the governor's office. And I don't mean that in any disparaging way. I think his strategy, his philosophy from day one has been to focus on what he would consider good government issues. If you look at past agendas, it was oftentimes dealing with things about bringing the state's computer system and the Department of Revenue into the 21st century, or dealing with infrastructure and dealing with broadband, the kinds of things that would shore up Indiana as a the kind of place where businesses want to function and hire in the future and produce products and grow. And I think he's avoided very carefully, and I'm sure not by accident, some of the so-called red meat issues that seem to be so popular with a lot of other chief executives across the country, and certainly with many lawmakers. So I don't think we're getting any bait and switch here. I think that Eric Holcomb has been pretty consistent from day one that he sees his job as delivering to the state of Indiana the best state government it can, and improving the overall quality of life. And keep in mind, you know, we've come a long way as a state since those bygone days when most work, not just budget work, everything essentially was done during odd-numbered years because that's all there was. The short sessions were instituted, we should forget, to deal with emergencies. And for years, you know, lawmakers were loath to do anything that, you know, the quicker we can be done and not add to the state code book, the better off we are. That's clearly given way to short sessions being maybe shorter on the calendar, but no shorter in terms of the volume of legislation that is enacted or the issues that are tackled.
Well, Indiana lawmakers heard hours of testimony, nearly 8 hours of testimony Wednesday, on legislation about curriculum and classroom transparency for schools. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay explains supporters say it aims to reduce division, but critics say it could have a chilling effect on how teachers talk about race and other big topics.
Senate Bill 167 would create committees for parents and teachers to review school curriculum and content. It also would prohibit schools from including what supporters call divisive concepts in classrooms, teacher preparation programs, or training, and require them to post details about lesson plans online. Senator Scott Baldwin authored the bill and says the intent is to prevent teachers from telling students how to feel about certain issues.
But they need to be position neutral, not influence that one way or the other. The education system shouldn't be about that influence or that division.
Supporters are concerned about how some teachers approach conversations on topics like anti-racism and equity, but many who oppose the bill say it could limit children's access to a well-rounded education.
Ann Delaney, what's wrong with ensuring teachers aren't telling students how to feel about an issue?
I think it assumes that there are no moral absolutes, for one thing. I mean, how do you tell children about something like the Holocaust or about slavery and then be neutral about it? It is another part of the culture wars where Republicans are creating an issue that's divisive and hateful just so they can stir up the public. I mean, the idea that you're going to have these committees operating in every school district and every parent now can open up every textbook the child has and read it if they're concerned about it. The remedy for this under this bill is to take the student out of the classroom while this is being taught. Okay, well, maybe little Johnny finds arithmetic progressions suddenly disconcerting. So you take him out of math, you take him out of history, and we all know that if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. We need to talk about these things because they are part of our past. If we're ever going to improve our country and our quality of life, and there are absolutes, and certainly the ones I mentioned, and even January 6th and 9/11 are absolutes, and no reasonable person would argue that any of those events were positive. You can't give a balanced, or what they're looking for, a balanced approach to say, well, slavery was good because, or the Holocaust was good because the Nazis made the trains run on time, or whatever other ridiculous argument you would hear. I think this has a definite chilling effect. It's kind of like 1984 to me, where you're going to determine what you want your child to know and what that does for that child when they're applying to places outside the state of Indiana or taking tests about applying to places in colleges and all is incredibly not only divisive, but incredibly dangerous for the child's future. I think they should just stay out of the cultural wars, whether it's partisan election of school boards or deciding what the curriculum should be. It is just divisive on the Republican part and designed to cause problems.
Mike O'Brien, Scott Baldwin, the author of this bill, found himself tripped up by this bill this week, where at the committee hearing, he was asked by a history teacher about, you know, should he be position neutral on things like fascism and Nazism? And Baldwin said, yes. He then had to walk back what he said to reporters after he was asked about it. But isn't that exactly the sort of problem where you accidentally or not say one thing and then have to walk it back that this creates in our classrooms?
Yeah, I mean, he gets tripped up by it because what he's trying to accomplish is really hard. And trying to find a legislative common ground to influence or make sure that teachers aren't influencing the feelings of people or children is a complicated thing to legislate. But I do think it's why they're trying to put some structure around more parental involvement in coordination with administrators. So there's better dialogue. We've seen pretty brutal school board meetings where, you know, there is legislation that like requires them, you know, school boards to allow the public to speak, because we've had situations where school boards have just decided, hey, we're just going to have a policy where no one can talk because we just don't like what they're saying. Well, that's not the right approach either. It is hard from a curriculum standpoint. I can't figure out in my own mind, frankly, because it's a really hard needle to thread. The difference between a parent's view of a teacher teaching a student and giving them some kind of bias on something that's being taught, and how that's separated from what the parent's position is on the underlying issue at all, whether it's January 6th or something more benign like biology, or like if you're fundamental Christian, you know, or evolution, or these other things that you may just have a fundamental, like completely, you know, honest disagreement about. Real quick, in my own experience, my son was going through a course on UNIGOV from Indianapolis back in the 70s. And half of it was about government consolidation and efficiencies and how that allowed, you know, consolidation and economic development, and why Indianapolis is the city it is today. The other part was politics. And there was a whole unit on what was defined as white flight. Well, you read that and you're not me. Like, I can go explain the differences in government reform and what it does to demographics or gentrification or urban flight or these other things and what they do to, like, voting patterns and political outcomes. I can do that. You know, no more that I can't teach them math, but I can teach them that. But I can understand why the parent next door might look at that and go, wait a minute, why is the school teaching my kid about white flight? You know, and get upset about that. So it is a very complicated thing that we're trying to accomplish here.
You have to teach them about white flight because it happened.
I didn't say it wasn't legitimate. Okay. Here's what they mean by that. Right.
Well, there's a lot to this bill and others like it. We will talk a lot more about these sorts of bills in future shows, but I want to move on because time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, will state lawmakers' efforts to address school curriculum have a negative effect on how teachers talk about race and other big topics? A, yes, or B, no. The question we asked you a few weeks ago before we took off for the holidays, should state lawmakers focus big revenue increases on cutting taxes or spending on government programs? Just 30% of you say they should cut taxes, 70% say it's time to spend on programs. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb responded recently to Attorney General Todd Rokita's statements that Rokita doesn't trust the state's COVID-19 data, or any COVID-19 data for that matter. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the governor called the comments demoralizing.
In an interview with WSBT in South Bend on vaccine mandate lawsuits, Rokita said he doesn't believe any numbers anymore and said the data has been politicized from day one. Holcomb responded to those comments.
I will say that I was stunned and somewhat blindsided by the Attorney General when he said he didn't trust any information, because that, to me, hit home.
Holcomb says Rokita has not reached out to him and he had not reached out to the Attorney General.
It's quite serious when you accuse or insinuate anyone of inflating numbers. In my book, that's called fraud.
Holcomb says if there is a shred of evidence, Rokita should take that to the Inspector General.
Nikki Kelly, the Attorney General has issued two or three statements since his original comments. What has he been saying in response to that and to Governor Holcomb?
Yeah, I mean, on the day the governor made those comments, he did a couple tweets, and it was sort of like he was trying to refine it, but it was essentially the same thing. Like, he didn't, really change. And then he more recently, just yesterday, put out an op-ed for various newspapers on sort of why people aren't trusting things. He does give one or two examples, very isolated incidents of, where something was counted wrong as a death and shouldn't. And I don't think anyone's saying that this system, which is full of humans, doesn't have an occasional error. But, you know, to go from, okay, there are occasional errors, to not believing anything is what he's done. It kind of reminds me of the whole voter integrity and the election thing, which is, sure, you can find an occasional voter fraud issue, but does that invalidate the entire, you know, system of voting? And that's what I see is kind of going on, just to put it in a different perspective.
And Delaney, what is the point of what Todd Rokita keeps saying over and over again?
Well, the point is he wants to make himself the Donald Trump of Indiana. I think the governor was absolutely right to call him out. He's the leading lawyer for the state of Indiana, and he's accusing his sitting governor of committing a fraud, and he has absolutely no evidence of it. No evidence. Nikki's right. I mean, occasionally you're going to have a mistake. Somebody's going to get counted twice or some other such thing. But that doesn't invalidate the vast numbers that are out there. And for him to make that assertion and to try to, I assume, encourage people not to socially distance, not to wear masks, not to get vaccinated, it's completely irresponsible. I think the governor was absolutely right to call him out. And Rokita is an absolute disgrace to the state of Indiana. There's no doubt in my mind. He wants to be Donald Trump because he wants to be governor. And shame on us if we elect him.
Mike O'Brien, Todd Rokita uses the term servant's heart an awful lot. He talks about serving with a servant's heart. How does all of this that he keeps saying about these numbers, what service does that do to the people of Indiana?
Well, we all have our own idea of service. But I think he's true to some degree that the data or the issue has been politicized. Certainly, we see that everywhere in growth of government and election reform and social service reform and other things that people use this as to bring ideas that aren't new at all to the forefront and try to make them a priority and justify them for that purpose. But to question, you know, the integrity of the Department of Health, to question the integrity of state government that is in a very Hoosier pragmatic way tried to address this crisis in the most reasonable way possible is unacceptable. And it's just rinse and repeat with him that it's appeal to the lowest common denominator, and that's the strategy.
All right. Well, Indiana House and Senate leaders don't appear to have many plans in place if there are significant COVID-19 outbreaks this session. Amid a worse surge of the virus than at any time in 2021, none of last year's precautions are in place anymore. Last year, the House moved its entire chamber to a different government building in order to spread out more. Many Senate committee hearings were changed to keep people testifying in separate rooms from lawmakers. Plexiglass dividers went up on both chamber floors. House Speaker Todd Houston says it's now about personal responsibility.
People should take the precautions they need, that they feel are necessary for them.
If there is an outbreak of the virus among lawmakers or staff, Senate GOP leader Roderick Bray says they'll deal with it as it comes.
I don't know that we have a specific contingency plan that we'll employ, but we'll try and address it as best as we can when it presents itself.
John Schwanis, we never really saw any serious COVID disruptions last session when everybody kind of thought there would be. But are lawmakers going to stay that lucky 2 years in a row?
Well, as fast-moving as the Omicron variant is and the impact it's having, I guess all bets are off. I posed some of those very same questions on this week's installment of Indiana Lawmakers, which, of course, airs on many
Ooh,
of these
boy,
same
boy, getting it in early this year.
Station. And it did seem that while the speaker would not absolutely 100% under no circumstances rule out some sort of mitigation or some sort of changes, it's pretty clear that he sees this as business as normal, that we have to live with and work through the virus. And this is another instance where you see some real differences, it seems to me, between the supermajority caucus in the House and the Senate. Just as we talked about earlier with the tax question, you know, we got to move now or do we wait and see? You hear, see in this case, the speaker in the House saying, no, we don't want to, you know, we're not going to do this. And yet you have the president pro tem, same party, saying, well, we don't think so, and we don't have plans, but we'll see it. We'll call them as they come. And I think this is sort of a theme we're seeing on any number of issues. that's arisen this session.
Nikki Kelly, the conversation last year about all those precautions were we want to make sure that Hoosiers, average Hoosiers, feel safe to come to the State House, to come to state government and testify and make their voice heard. Is there a legitimate reason that Hoosiers should be worried about that this year?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I was someone who was immunocompromised, had any of these chronic conditions, I would feel absolutely uncomfortable coming in that building. You know, just thinking about how we personally are doing interviews with the leaders of the legislature. Last year, we sat in desks apart from each other. Now we're in tiny little scrums where we're literally on top of each other. I mean, I'll be shocked if we all don't get it.
All right. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review. On that bright note for this week, our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy. Please, please, please get vaccinated if you can. And join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.